You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Euros have come and gone. Chiellini's passion, Foden's bleach, Pedri's brilliance, Chiesa's curlers, Maguire's magnificent, Shaw's supremacy, Denmark's resurgence, Schick's screamer, Hazard's thumper, and Goran Pandev's last hurrah. The Olympics, too, have come and gone. Tom Daley's knitting, Jason Kenny's long-lasting brilliance, Keely Hodgkinson's record-breaking 800 metres, Kipchoge's awe-inspiring marathon, Petey swimming, Dina Asher-Smith, Adam Jamili, KJT, all in tears, Galal Yafai, Simon Biles, Sunisa Lee, Rebecca Andrade, Max Whitlock, and so on and on. It's all gone, it's all done, and now the football returns.
Talent.
Wow. I mean, listen, this kid, I think he'll be the best English player in the coming years.
There's some good ones coming through.
There's some great players coming through, so to say that is a big, big statement, but I believe in him.
Marcus Rashford scores! Dramatically late again for Manchester United in the Parc des Princes!
It's my pleasure to welcome you back to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast, to welcome you to the new Premier League season, to 2021-22, to a season about fans, about their return, their voices, their stories, yours, mine, everyone else's. I am as excited as I've ever been for the football to begin, I think, and I can't wait to share it with you all. I'm Harry Robinson, and with me, as always, is Jack Tate, and today we'll be catching up briefly on the summer, on pre-season, on Jadon Sancho, on Raphael Varane, James Garner, Antony Elanga, Facundo Pellistri, and then we'll talk about our expectations for the season, and finally, we'll preview preview Saturday's game against Leeds United. Mouthwatering. I've already been looking forward to it for days, and these next 5 or 6 days are going to be quite something in anticipation. Jack, before we dive into all of that, how are you? How's your summer been?
Yeah, it's been good, mate. It's good to be back. I mean, it's been a summer not of United, that's for sure, but of still of a lot of sport, obviously, with the Euros, which I'm sure as every other English person in the world, I was absolutely glued to. And then since then, the Olympics, we were just talking before we started recording that it's been a very pleasant surprise how good the Olympics has been, how much of that I've watched. So it's been good to enjoy some sunshine, enjoy some good sport, and have a bit of a break from United and the tears that they left me in back at the end of May.
Yeah. Those tears and then replicated in the same manner with another penalty shootout, but for England this time. It did feel, as England supporting Manchester United fans or Manchester United supporting England fans, it felt like we'd been slightly hard done by that penalty shootout heartbreak twice within, what, seven,
twice
eight
in 6 weeks.
Yeah. And at both times it had that same, let's not talk about that, but in terms of watching sport, I have recovered now from England's defeat. I've also recovered from United's defeat and moved on and feel absolutely fine about it. And Italy were a fantastic team and fully deserved to win. So it was all right. And I loved watching them. And the Euros, actually, before we talk about the Olympics very briefly, but the Euros were brilliant as a tournament. Yeah. It was one of the really good international tournaments. It had everything about it.
Yeah, every game it felt like was so good. I mean, there was hardly any games in the whole tournament that I turned on and then turned off 5-10 minutes later, which I feel like it happens a lot in almost every major tournament. Even throughout the group stages, there were so many teams that were good to watch. And I think the fact that they did the third place teams going through from the group, it made teams go out and attack more, because you couldn't just draw every game and hope to go through. You got one win and it changed everything. You had teams like Ukraine who, even though they were very defensive in the knockouts, in the group stages, they played some unbelievable football. Like their game against Holland was brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, there were so many games, and the games that you were forced to miss through work or being out or anything, like I was catching up with it and just so desperate that I was missing them and thinking, oh, I wish I could watch this and like going. I remember I lost my keys during the, I went to play five-a-side during the France-Switzerland game, that incredible game. I missed, I think, the first 20 minutes while I was playing five-a-side, and then got back home, realised I'd lost my keys. So spent the next hour being driven around Manchester by my mate, looking in various places for my keys. But all the while had France-Switzerland up on my phone. This stressful situation where I was thinking, it was the day before England-Germany as well, which I was going to. And I thought, if I can't get back into my house, I can't then go to England-Germany. So I was in trouble, but I was watching France Switzerland the whole time, and then finally got back for the last 15 minutes of extra time and this stunning drama, and then Switzerland going through. It was, every game was brilliant, brilliant tournament. And the Olympics as well has massively surpassed my expectations in total. I've watched everything and just really enjoyed the summer of sport. And like you say, yeah, relaxed sport without United involved.
Yeah, which has been lovely. I wouldn't say it's been relaxed viewing the whole time with the Euros, but the Olympics has been a brilliant little break. I love watching the Olympics. I don't feel quite so invested, but it's just brilliant to watch sport and to watch sort of the human side of all those stories. You know, the likes of Tom Daley, Jason Kenny, Laura Kenny, all of those stories it's brilliant to watch and feel like you're a bit of a part of.
Yeah. And I was watching the marathon last night. We're recording this on Sunday. The day the Olympics end, I was watching the marathon last night, just absolutely just jaw-dropping. And I don't think I'd ever really considered how fast they run the marathon in the Olympics before, because I probably never watched it in full before, but such is the nature of life right now. But I was watching it with a few mates and just, yeah, completely jaw-dropping at the speed they run at. And yeah, I've been in awe for the last 24 hours just thinking about it. I keep thinking back to it. The fact that they run at a pace of 2 minutes and 9 seconds for a kilometre, and they do that for pretty much an entire marathon, is just completely beyond the realms of belief. I honestly didn't believe it when they said it on commentary. And I still can't really believe it, that human beings can do that. It's utterly out of this world. Let's talk football. Before we do, just very quickly, a quick explainer for what's coming up on the Manchester United Weekly Podcast this season. We've generally had pretty much the same structure since we began in January 2016 in the brilliant winter time that was Louis van Gaal's Manchester United. But yeah, pretty much had the same structure. We're changing things up very slightly this year. First of all, we'll be releasing every Monday evening. So all of our episodes will come out on Monday evening and we'll have an episode every Monday. So hopefully that'll be nice and consistent and you can either listen on that Monday evening or Tuesday on your way to work or at work or whatever. We're also going to have plenty of new features. So we're going into the new season. Instead of having the same structure every week, we're going to go on kind of a monthly schedule. So once a month, in the middle of the show, you'll get a bumper youth update, 5 minutes long with a profile of one player, and we'll get a guest on to talk about that player. Another time in the month, you'll get a bumper loan update with an interview with a journalist who covers one of that player's respective clubs. So say James Garner goes back on loan to Nottingham Forest, we'll talk to a journalist who's been watching him every week. Another point in the month, we're going to have a detailed tactical breakdown, again with a guest, possibly looking at some detailed analytics as well, but trying to explain it in pretty simple terms, just to look at how United have developed over that month. Another point in the month, you'll have a one historical story coming from the United Through Time podcast, and then there'll also be a bumper women's team update with a guest each month as well. Those will all come in the middle of the episode. You won't get it in this episode because it's a season preview and we've got loads to talk about. And the final thing to explain before we dive into our pre-season review is, well, Jack, fire away.
So anyone who follows our Twitter account has hopefully seen this already, but we'll be running our own FPL league this season. Just a way for us to connect with you guys and give us all a bit of a chance to hopefully win some money. So it's completely free for everyone to join. We'll be giving out cash prizes to the top three in the league and also the winner of the cup at the end of the season. It'll just be a fun way for all of us to get involved, do fantasy. I feel like the fantasy Harry got a lot more popular last year because everyone was stuck inside and people actually, actually still did their fantasy team past the first month of the season. So hopefully that continues as well. The code for the league for anyone who's interested in joining will be up on our Twitter account, but for those of you listening now, it's ILWW6H. That's ILWW6H. But we'll be tweeting both today on Sunday and after the episode comes out tomorrow on Monday, with a link to join the league. So again, it's completely free to join, but cash prizes for everyone. There's already around 20 of you, in the league. So thank you to everyone that's already joined. And we'll give some semi-regular updates about how the league's going, maybe every month or so, give a quick update about who's leading, who's shot up the leaderboard this month, you know, who's had the best weeks, et cetera. So we're really excited to get that going.
Yeah, we'll see if we can put, we will be putting our money where our mouth is, but we'll see if we can walk the talk. Right, we're going to go to, I was at the Everton game on Saturday, brilliant atmosphere, as you will hear in the following clips. And then after you hear a bit from me at Old Trafford on Saturday, then we're going to talk a little bit about pre-season and then we'll move on to Sancho and Varane.
It's a pretty bleak day at Old Trafford. The rain is coming down, not in sheets, but certainly in strings. Old Trafford on these kind of days, kind of those white, magnificent white cantilever stands and the grey of the top of it almost seems to reflect white and grey sky that we so often see around these parts, until you come and stand in the main forecourt and you see those bright lit up red letters of Manchester United. It's 2 hours before kickoff, maybe 2 and a bit hours before kickoff, and there's a couple of people posing by the Holy Trinity statue, a couple of people posing with some replica Premier League, Champions League and FA Cups, what looks like the treble. Not that any of those trophies have been lifted around here for a while, certainly not by the Red Half of Manchester, unfortunately, but things might change this season. Two fantastic signings in Jadon Sancho and Rafael Varane, which we'll talk about more shortly. And it is a pretty grim day. It's meant to be raining all day here. Seen a few Everton fans around for what should be a pretty good friendly. It was only a friendly that, but a good one, an entertaining one, an intense first half, a 4-0 win for Manchester United, a slightly more serene second half, with plenty of subs punctuating the action for both sides. Always happens that in friendlies, and it's a bit of a shame when The first half's been so good. I'm just on the bus home from Old Trafford now. Hung around for a couple of hours. And yeah, just a fantastic atmosphere. Brilliant. I cannot explain how much I've missed seeing an Old Trafford. Not quite full, 55,000. The main stand was closed. But 55,000, 20,000 shy of the full thing. But it's just the noise and it's the sound, the appearance, the smells. It evokes all the senses. A full football crowd of that size. It was fantastic, and I've missed it so much. The weather was terrible, absolutely terrible. Pissing rain all day. Stopped about an hour after full time, finally. But rain for this one means blazing sun for Leeds United next week. Then I'll certainly take that. But it was just a day for me. I've been to a couple of United games. I've been fortunate to go to a couple during lockdown, and then I was really lucky to get a ticket for the Fulham game back in May when Cavani scored that lob. One of the 10,000 to get a ticket for that. I was in East Stand for that, and that was brilliant. It was loud. It was emotional. It was fantastic. I had a great day. But this was another step up, without a doubt. And I'd actually just forgotten what a wall of noise from Old Trafford could sound like. I think a lot of us have forgotten. We remembered like having great times there, hearing the noise, but I forgot exactly what it sounded like, because even at midday, 45 minutes before kickoff, an early kickoff, there weren't many people in the stadium, just a smattering of people, and there were three open stands, there were just a few people in each. And just before midday, Alan Keegan, the stadium announcer, read out the teams for the first time. Just the noise was just already enormous. 5 minutes later, a few more people in. The goalkeepers came out, got a raucous reception. De Gea, Grant and Heaton. And then a few minutes after that, more people are in and the team comes out. And massive noise. And then a special reception reserved for Paul Pogba and Luke Shaw, purely because they came out a little later than the rest of the team as individuals. But Shaw got a hero's welcome as one of England's heroes of the summer. And Paul Pogba got a brilliant reception. He stopped to pray by the corner flag, and then he sprinted over to join his teammates. And then when the Rondo came to a little bit of a pause and everyone had a slight break from the warm-up, he chatted to fans at the front of the Sir Alex Ferguson stand, looked in great spirits. And then Old Trafford filled to a level we've not seen in 18 months, and the teams walked out, and there was still a small section of the stadium empty, and made the photos look not quite so good. But from where I was sat in the press box, you watch the teams come out, and behind them is that typical football scene, the painting-esque scene of different shades of blacks, blues, browns and reds, punctuated by the occasional luminous steward. And I have just missed that. That's what I mean. It's not just the sound of fans, it's also the sight that makes these games look so much better. And this was a friendly, but it felt like a league fixture. Everton fans came in good numbers and were incredibly loud to begin with. Quietened off a bit after they conceded three in the first half, but brilliant noise to start with. And United support was good. It was as you expect for a pre-season friendly. It was some moments of big chance, but a lot of families coming, a lot of kids, and that was fantastic. And for so many kids, this will be their first time at Old Trafford. And for a lot of them, they might have gone once before lockdown and then had to wait 18 months, 19 months to come back again. And you know what kids are like. They would have been waiting so impatiently to get back, and will just be delighted to be back there and enjoying it. And that's great. But yeah, it felt like a league fixture. And so all of this might sound like too much for a pre-season friendly, but actually it felt like a league game, certainly to start with. Obviously by the end it didn't. It was just an atmosphere I've not really heard for a friendly before, because everyone just was so happy to be back. As for the games, two early goals. Good. I mean, Mason Greenwood looked very fresh. He played the full game, and then good instinct to pounce on a mistake between Dino and Pickford. Maguire with a great emphatic header from a Luke Shaw cross reminded me of England at the Euros this summer. And United played well. We were bright, confident, looked fit. And as I said in a piece for the United website, there's no better cure for a rainy Mancunian day than a fluid footballing display from the Reds. And Bruno Fernandes added with a great free kick. After Matic was fouled on the edge of the box, got significant love from the United fans. And then it was made four late on by Diogo Dalot. And just when Fernandes is free kicking, I just went in, I just sat back and looked around at like all these people celebrating, and I just thought it just is special, just 55,000 people reacting to one single kick. And each one of those 55,000 people has their own celebration, their own feeling, their own companion next to them, their son, their daughter, their parent, their grandparent, an uncle or an aunt or a family friend who's taken them. And all of those people have their own personal United story. And I mean, football is brilliant in that way. The second half, it quietened down a bit. It wasn't quite so good. Fantastic, fantastic afternoon. United better than I expected, and then now the wait for next Saturday is going to feel like a long one for us all. But I mean, that's what's brilliant. There's little to beat the week-long build-up of excitement towards a big game, and I just cannot wait for Leeds United in 5, 6, 7 days time, depending on when you listen to this. Cannot wait.
All right, Jack, pre-season in general, your thoughts on it? For me, basically, it's been a good preseason. It could have been better. The good parts are, in particular, three players: Anthony Elanga, James Garner, and Facundo Pellistri. Some brilliant goals, some great atmospheres. Fantastic to have fans back, both at Old Trafford for the Brentford and the Everton games, but also away at QPR and Derby. The main positive, it's been a good chunk of time to work on things, and listening to Solskjaer and all of the players and the coaching staff, that is they've all just really relished that, and it's fantastic compared to last season, given what a slow start of it. The only downside, it's a shame it's taken so long for Sancho and Varane to get involved, and the same with Pogba and Cavani, but I think we'll be all right on that front, and there's no excuse for a repeat of last year's terrible start to the season now.
Yeah, it's been good to be able to have a slightly more settled start to pre-season. We've obviously had players coming back late from the Euros and the Copa America in Fred's case. But in general, I think it's been a pretty good pre-season. I'm not too worried about the results or anything. You know, they're completely irrelevant at this stage. But it's just good to know that we hopefully won't get to... At least we won't have the reason of no pre-season if we get off to a slow start this year we did last year. For me, the standout and the main talking point from pre-season has definitely been Anthony Elanga. He obviously ended last season well. There's a few good performances, got his goal against Wolves, and that was a brilliant performance from him on the last day at Molineux. And he's continued that in pre-season. He's been brilliant. He's proven himself to be a real handful in, you know, every game that we've played, really. I was expecting him to go out on loan, to be honest, this season. But I think given how well he's played in pre-season, I think he'll probably stay now, and I think he should be in line for some good minutes as well.
Yeah.
We obviously have more depth now with Sancho coming in, but I think he should be getting opportunities, especially in the cups, maybe here and there in the Premier League if we get injuries or rotation. I think he's good enough to offer us a lot straight away, and I think it's definitely worth keeping him for this season rather than sending him out on loan.
Yeah, he's in that strange situation that kind of like how Newcastle used to go up between the Championship and the Premier League all the time. He's in that kind of situation between the 23s and the first team where he's too good for the 23s. Although it's not quite in the same category of Mason Greenwood, where it was like this is completely almost pointless for him, because in the under 18s it was pointless for him because he was just far too good and it wasn't helping him. It's not quite that level. But he's at that point where the under 23s isn't helping his development that much. But you also kind of want him in the first team, but you can't give him that many minutes. So you don't want to send him out on loan. And it is a really tricky one. And United will have thought about this a lot. And to be fair, I remember I've always thought with Elanga, he'd be one of those players that gets his first team chance before he's ready for it, if that makes sense. And the reason I think that is basically because he's a winger and he's fast. And that means that even if he's not ready for it, his attributes, incredible pace, incredible acceleration, and really direct, can kind of cover over the things he needs to work on. And also it means he makes an impression really quickly. And that's why when he came in at the end of the last season, I wasn't surprised he did well. And then I won't be surprised if he gets plenty of minutes this season, even if there might be other players in the under 23s who are more ready than Anthony Elanga or are more deserving than Anthony Elanga of getting a chance. And I don't think that's true, because he's worked incredibly hard, really hard working. He's loved around the training ground, and the coaching staff love him. I don't think anything summed up
either Elanga or Ole Gunnar Solskjaer more than when Solskjaer said of him after the Brentford game. He said, he's the kind of kid where if you asked him to go get you a drink from the cricket ground at halftime, he'd run over there and do it for you. And I thought that a typical Solskjaer press conference quote, and also summed up Anthony Elanga's character. But another one.
I think Rashford's injury, just before you move on, I think Rashford's injury might open up a few more opportunities for Elanga at the start of the season as well. You know, obviously Rashford probably won't be back until, it looks like it could be October before we see Rashford on the pitch for United again. So that might also open up a few more opportunities for Elanga. You know, I've obviously got some early season cup games in the League Cup in the next couple of months. And I think they will be good opportunities for him. You know, the likes of James or Greenwood are probably, I guess we could start Martial on the left as well, but they're probably going to be playing a good chunk of minutes in the Premier League. So rather than them playing in the League Cup as they may otherwise have done, it's going to have to be Elanga probably that steps up, which will probably be good for him to, you know, just get his teeth into the season early.
Yeah, I think you can chalk in that League Cup third round will be the kind of 20th of September, roughly. I can't remember exactly, but around that time, you can kind of chalk Elanga in for a starting position in that game already.
Yeah.
And obviously, Ahmad is coming back from the Olympics where he played all right for the Ivory Coast. They did okay, him and Eric Bailly. They were knocked out in the round of 16 by Spain, I think, possibly the quarterfinals, knocked out by Spain after extra time. And Ahmad did well. He got an assist in the group stages and looked lively again. He was, I think people were pretty pleased with him, but he's coming back from the Olympics. He's quarantining now after flying back from Japan. So he won't be involved in the start of the season. So again, that kind of shifts Elanga up the pecking order again. So yeah, he should get a few at the start of the season. It might be that he sticks around with the first team until January and then heads out on loan once Rashford's back, once Sancho's settled in, once Ahmad is getting more minutes, etc. And that's no bad thing. I think that would probably work quite well. The others who impressed, Pulisic, I thought looked really good, and I wish him very well at Alaves. I think it's good for him to go and get a full season of minutes. And I think we'd all kind of forgotten, well, we hadn't forgotten about Facundo Pulisic, but he had evaded our attention for quite a while. And he kind of reminded us that he's a really good talent and he's an exciting one to keep an eye on for probably 2 years' time, 3 years' time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's been something of a forgotten man, I think, since his move to United. He obviously hasn't been given many opportunities to really prove himself. And I think Ahmad coming in and looking so good straight away, at least Ahmad looking very exciting, has really overshadowed Facundo Pulisic. But he's had some really good performances for the under-23s. He's looked really good this preseason. I think going out on loan is probably the best option for him. I don't think he would have got too much of a look in at United this season. And it's a complete waste to just have him on the bench or in the reserves. And at this point, as you said, I don't think he's at a point where the under-23s is a waste for him. He still would have learned, but I mean, he's going to learn so much more being in Spain at Alaves than he would in the under-23. So I think it makes sense for everyone.
Yeah, I think that's true. Definitely one to keep an eye on. The final one is James Garner, who's come back from Nottingham Forest. He's bulked up a bit. He's certainly toughened up a bit. And his future is an interesting one because he's clearly an incredibly clever midfield player with great vision, great ability to play the passes that he can see. He's bulked up, he's improved the defensive side of his game at Nottingham Forest. And it is another difficult decision, the same as with Anthony Elanga, as to where you send him if you're going to send him out on loan. There's a chance that he could be United's fourth or fifth choice midfielder. How much is that going to benefit him? I'm not sure, but he could break into the team. The other options, you send him to a lower table Premier League side. That's also difficult because what if he's probably only going to get 15 starts over the course of the season? I think you're probably best off sending him to a good Championship side where he's going to play 45 times in a season and get some serious experience, and really you're going to find out whether he's good enough there. But certainly a player who impressed over pre-season. In terms of tactical changes over pre-season, there didn't seem to be many. Possibly a slightly higher defensive line, but no big formation change. But some people were expecting us to go into a 4-3-3 instead, but hasn't really been any real signs of it so far.
Everything seems to be pretty much as it was at the end of last season. And to be honest, I don't expect there to be many huge changes from the way that we set up. I think the signings that we've made, which we'll obviously come on to, I don't think they really change too much about the profile of Man United. I think we will probably still stick in this 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1 system with the occasional three at the back game. As we've seen from Solskjaer for the last couple of years, I don't really see any reason to change. I don't think we saw any particular signs last season that those systems needed changing. I don't think we signed anyone that you know, makes those systems different. So I expect us to be pretty much the same team in terms of how we set up, just hopefully more effective in how we execute.
Yeah. Yeah. There, I mean, there is the opportunity to go and play in a 4-3-3. The problem is to do that, you really need to bring in a brilliant defensive midfielder so that you can then play with two eights. And United aren't going to do that, it doesn't seem. The only other interesting thing is when Solskjaer was talking about Varane, I think after the Brentford friendly, the day after we'd announced that we'd agreed a deal for him, he mentioned that we might be able to play three at the back now that Varane's coming in, which is an interesting idea because I think he might have been saying it to kind of quieten the idea that Victor Lindelof was finished because Varane was coming in. I think maybe going for the idea that there are now three first choice centre-backs at United is what he was going for, but it is interesting. And I think what's certainly true is the arrival of Varane and Sancho and the fact we've kept Cavani, United suddenly have a lot more options as to how we can play and formations we can use, which is only a positive. So let's talk about Jadon Sancho first. Everything has already been said, but a fantastic signing, a fantastic price, fantastic age. There are no downsides to Jadon Sancho coming to Manchester United. And we've waited a long time for this and I cannot wait to watch him play. He's exciting. He'll fit in perfectly with the squad in terms of the type of player, but also the type of person. He's excited to be here. I just cannot wait to be at Old Trafford and watching Jadon Sancho play, even with the number 25 on his back, not the number 7.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much more for us to add on Sancho. This is a thing that's been analysed to death over the last 2 or 3 years. But I think, to be honest, not only are there known downsides to the signing, I've got to say, for once, I actually don't think I can really fault the club's process in this, despite the fact that we wanted him so much last year. You know, the club clearly had some targets they wanted to hit in terms of how much they wanted to pay for Sancho, and the price being quoted last year was astronomical, especially when the pandemic was just sort of getting started and the financial hit from that. I think ultimately we've ended up saving around 30 million, which is absolutely nothing to sneeze at when you consider that that's effectively what we just spent on Varane as well. I think you've got to give the club some credit, despite how terrible we've been in the transfer market in recent years. I think this is actually of great credit to everyone involved. I think the process with Sancho was very, very good and it made a lot of sense. And it really is a signing with no downsides. Like you said, the right age, the right profile of player in a position of need. You know, I mean, there's no guarantee, obviously, that Sancho's going to come in and be the player that we want him to be. But regardless of the outcome from here, Sancho is a fantastic signing. And there's no two ways about it. A fantastic signing.
Yeah. I think it's the perfect move for all involved. I think he'll take a couple of weeks, maybe a few weeks, maybe a couple of months even, to really get going at United. And I think his numbers of goals and assists will drop down a bit from what he's done in Germany. But I think by the end of the season, we'll be seeing him at his best. And I think he's going to be brilliant. He's going to help Wan-Bissaka to get better. He's going to help to stretch teams. He's going to create more space for the rest of the players. And most importantly, he'll set up goals and he'll score goals. And that is what we want him to do.
And he'll make the side so much more balanced as well. You know, we're so left side exactly, dominant, yeah. And we have been for years. And finally, we have a right winger at pretty much the same level as our left winger.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you're now looking at a front three when everyone's fit again. With you have 6 players up front as your main players, and your first choice is probably Rashford, Cavani, Sancho. But then as the understudy to Rashford on the left, perhaps you have Martial or Greenwood, and then you have Martial as under. Basically, you've got Martial, Rashford, Greenwood, Cavani, Ahmad, and Sancho, and that's a really exciting 6, all of who except Cavani, who's a striker, and Sancho, who's a winger, can play in all of those positions. And that gives you endless possibilities. It gives United the chance to have a front three which is much more fluid than we've seen in the past. And we've kind of seen hints at that in the past when we've had Rashford, Martial, and Greenwood all playing together.
And adding Dan James and Anthony Elanga into that as well.
Yeah.
You know, who we didn't even mention yet. And obviously they won't get probably too many minutes, but just the options that we have up there it's really, really something to behold, the options that we have.
Yeah, absolutely. Strangely enough though, is the better signing Rafael Varane?
Maybe. Yeah, to be honest, it potentially is. Varane, honestly, when the link started at the start of the summer, I basically discounted it from my mind. I just thought there's absolutely no way. We've been down this road too many times before, both with Varane and with Real Madrid centre-backs in general. Yeah. The United are often used as like a stalking horse, really, just to get a new contract. But it actually happened. And to be honest, I mean, it's a great signing. I don't think Varane is quite the centre-back that he was a couple of years ago. I don't think he is... I wouldn't put Varane up there as sort of one of the top two or three in Europe, but he's definitely in that group behind that. And I think, despite the fact that I do think he has a mistake in him at times, I can't fault this signing again, because he is... What I loved about this transfer window, despite the fact we've only signed two players, and I think wanted more than that, and we'll come on to that in a second. What I loved about the two signings we've made is that not only are they good players at a decent price, but the profile of those players is exactly what we needed. And it just shows so much clearer thought behind our strategy in the transfer market that we haven't seen for a number of years at United. It used to just be just throw money at something and hope that it sticks. But there's so much more thought in it now. And Varane, even take away the name, but a centre-back who is very good on the ball, has exceptional pace, and is very good in the air, and his strength is one-on-one defending and being a sweeper, is exactly the kind of centre-back we wanted to partner Harry Maguire. Because those are all Maguire's weaknesses. We've said constantly in the last year or two that we need someone who's faster than Victor Lindelof, who is better at being a sweeper, and is more comfortable on the ball. And Varane ticks all of those boxes. Add in the fact that it is Raphael Varane, serial trophy winner, multiple Champions Leagues, World Cups.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, for £34 million as well, in this market, is an absolute steal.
Yeah. It's a signing that reflects the stature of Manchester United, or at least what we think the stature of Manchester United should be and hasn't been for the last few years.
It's also probably the declining stature of Real Madrid at the moment as well, which is quite funny to watch.
Absolutely. And it's nice to take away one of their good players rather than giving them one of ours. But yeah, you only hear good things about Raphael Varane. And as you say, just all of those trophies he's experienced, he's done the lot. And I think one of the good things is he wants to challenge. He wants to be in the Premier League, and he wants to be at Manchester United. And I've heard things this week about just how he's really self-analytical. He does loads of analysis, always asking video teams for more that he can get stuck into at home. He watches other players to learn from them, as the best players do. And just everything about him sounds like the proper professional with genuine ambition to do something at United. And a proper Manchester United player. And as you say, the perfect partner for Maguire, but also will help cover some of Wan-Bissaka's weaknesses as well, I hope. In terms of what more we want, I think obviously a defensive midfielder, it's a shame that that's not going to happen, it seems, without sales happening. And I can't see us generating enough from sales unless Pogba goes, which I don't think is going to happen. I think he'll stay. The only players I can think of that we'd sell are probably Andreas Pereira and Diogo Dalot, and they're not going to generate enough. And I think only one of them we're going to be able to shift anyway. Everyone is struggling to, all the big clubs are struggling to sell players that they don't want at the moment. So we're going to struggle on that front. So I can't see us bringing a midfielder in, which is a shame, because I think if we do, then suddenly you're looking at a team where you think, yeah, title.
Yeah, it really does feel like we are basically a midfielder away at this point. You know, I think we already were getting there. Last season, we saw a lot of progress from the players that we already had. We've added two very, very good signings already. This summer has been a bit of a double-edged sword, because it's been great so far in terms of the signings we've made. Sancho and Varane, like I said, are excellent, excellent signings, and I really can't fault either of those. But in some ways, it's doubly frustrating that we haven't managed to get that midfielder across the line, because it feels like we are so, so close to being right there as a genuine challenger to the likes of City, Chelsea, Liverpool. But then I look down at our team and I'm still so unsure about that midfield. I just don't know I think I do know, and I don't think we can. I don't think we can be a consistent enough team to win a title with McTominay and Fred as our primary options at defensive midfield.
I think the problem is you're basically looking at how many more points can we get from last season. Bear in mind that last season wasn't enough to win a title, even if City hadn't been as good. And I think you're looking at, with how much City have spent again and how good their team was already, with Liverpool's, well, predicted resurgence, I don't think Liverpool start. I feel like Liverpool could have a shaky start and then come into themselves once Van Dijk and Gomez settle again. But I am expecting a lot from them. Plus Chelsea, who I just get this sense that they could just steamroller teams. Just absolutely batter people in the same way that Mourinho's Chelsea did with Drogba up front. I just have this fear about Chelsea at the moment, who just being able to just absolutely steamroller people. You've got those three teams, and so the team that's going to win the league is possibly I think going to have at least 90 points, possibly kind of mid 90s. Can United get to that? I can't see it happening. And that's the truth. I think, unfortunately, the three teams around us are very good. City are silly. Chelsea are terrifying. Liverpool will come back. There's a chance we could be less fortunate with injuries. And there's lots of, I guess it's straight. We probably have quite a well-established top four this season. And maybe it's premature to say that. And it seems strange because Leicester City are very good. They should make a decent go of it. But none of those four clubs should finish outside the top four. It should be City, Chelsea, United and Liverpool as the top four. What order that's in, some of it's going to come down to luck. Some of it's going to come down to injuries, down to fixture scheduling, all of this. But I think ultimately I see United finishing third.
Yeah, I think you've seen this summer, you've seen that top four kind of separate themselves from everyone else rather than the likes of Arsenal and Tottenham and Leicester closing up. I think you've probably seen them honestly move closer to the teams behind them, like Aston Villa, who have made some great moves despite losing Grealish. I think in terms of United, I did a short write up of a season preview for Racing Post Sport recently. And I said, I don't think I can really give a position, but I can probably give a points total. And my prediction was about 85 points. And I'd stick by that. I think, you know, we ended, was it 79 we ended on last season? And that was with, you know, a dodgy finish brought on by ridiculous scheduling and everything. I think mid 80s is achievable for this team. And I don't think that would require anything particularly crazy to happen. You know, I think mid 80s is probably where this team is at the moment. And that would be about expected. And that has won the league before. But as you're saying, this is not a weak top of the table. This is probably one of the strongest set of four teams that the Premier League has had in a long time. And I do see it taking more than 90 points to win it. Is this United team capable of it? Maybe, but I think it would take everything to go right for this United team to get anywhere near that. And I just don't see it happening. I think I see us between 80 and 85 points, and which position in the top four that puts us, I don't know 100%. You know, everything is, there's always something unexpected in the Premier League. So it could happen that one of these teams falls off, gets terrible injury luck, or, you know, we have a surprise from one of those teams that I just mentioned from sort of fourth down to seventh. But I would probably guess second or third with around 85 points at this moment in time. I think without a midfielder coming in, it's just difficult to see us being able to get up to that 92, 93 point mark.
Yeah. And it is worth noting that the pandemic has had an effect on the market. And I think a lot of us immediately thought, oh, people won't spend as much. But what's actually happened is the big clubs can all still spend the same amount, and the disparity is just got back to the levels it was before the TV deal and the Premier League kind of leveled things out for a bit. So we haven't seen Leicester and Everton spend as much as they did in the last few years, but we have seen United spend over 100 on Sancho and Varane. We have seen City buy Grealish for 100. It seems like we're going to see Chelsea buy Lukaku for almost £100 million as well. Liverpool bought Konate. Haven't spent quite as much, but I think they probably do another couple of smaller deals before the window ends. It is worth noting that you say everything going right for United, and that is kind of the positive, though, isn't it? That United winning the title isn't out the question. It's just not what we think is going to happen. But there are so many things to be optimistic about, and if a few of them happen, not even all of them, you're suddenly thinking, "Wow!" That say Anthony Martial finds form again. Say Mason Greenwood really starts to kick on. Say Varane just settles in immediately straight away and has hate to say it, Van Dijk, it's a cliche now really, Van Dijk-esque impact or Bruno-esque impact even. Say Jadon Sancho just absolutely lights the Premier League up. Say our set pieces are sorted by the new coach, Eric Ramsey. Say Donny van der Beek starts to break out. Paul Pogba has a really consistent season for the first time. There is all of these things. Maybe two or three of them could happen and suddenly think, wow, yeah, United are going to be a really good team. But yeah, I think just City have strengthened too much and they are just too good anyway. And I'm concerned about Liverpool as well. And interestingly, when I was thinking about this, I thought...
The Lukaku signing really changes everything for me as well, because to be honest, I've been a lot lower on Tuchel's Chelsea than most people. I know they won the Champions League, but to be honest, I wasn't particularly impressed with a lot of their play last season. That going forward, they just weren't good to watch. And that was probably a lot of my bias against them, because I just didn't enjoy watching them play, even though their results were good. But getting that world-class striker in Lukaku, I think does change everything for Chelsea. And that puts them above United, I would say, in my sort of pre-season expectations. I would probably put United actually with Liverpool. And I think Liverpool have sort of fallen behind a little. So they obviously still have a very, very good team, but I think City and Chelsea have just separated themselves from everyone else. City obviously already were a cut above the rest. Bringing in Grealish just strengthens that even further. And Chelsea ironing out really their one, maybe not problem area, but the one area where you looked at them and thought they might be a bit short. It changes everything to me. And yeah.
Yeah, I think about that Chelsea front line and you think about Havertz linking between Lukaku and Werner. And we saw, we know Romelu Lukaku well. When he's at his best, he's unstoppable. He's a brilliant finisher. He can just shrug people off. And also what he does really well is run into the channels and win the ball there and hold up the ball incredibly well and create chances for other people as well as himself when he's at his best. And at the moment, he is at his best. And we know that Timo Werner's pace running down the channels is incredible as well. So you imagine Havertz, if he can find his form as well, which I kind of expect him to do so after a year in England, Havertz linking between Werner and Lukaku is a scary, scary prospect with goal scoring contributions from Mount behind. Yeah. And Jorginho having a great season and Kante. Chelsea are a scary team. And the truth is with Chelsea is they always have a couple of years off and then a couple of incredible years. And that's how they're ruthlessly run. And they are the most successful club in England for the last decade. And it's exactly because they're utterly ruthless.
They're also, I would say, a team that they seem to defy expectations a lot. I remember there have been so many seasons recently where you go into a season and just think Chelsea are completely dead and buried and they end up pulling something out of the bag. And there are other seasons where you go into it and think they're nailed on to win the title and everything falls apart. You know, you remember the start of last season, everyone thought Chelsea would, or in fact, the season before, everyone thought Chelsea were doomed, you know, with Lampard as coach, the transfer ban, they had a decent season. And then last season, everyone thought Chelsea were going to run away with it. Well, alongside City and Liverpool, we're going to, you know, run away from everyone else and it didn't happen. They're a strange team in that stuff just seems to happen to Chelsea that no one expects. So we'll see what happens with them this season. But at the moment, I'd probably put them just behind City as second favourites.
Yeah, I think my optimistic prediction at the moment, or very, very mildly optimistic, would be City, Chelsea, United, Liverpool. I think the pessimistic one would be City, Chelsea, Liverpool, United in fourth. But I think we should be finishing third. And
it's a weird one because I think this season, to be honest, because of how congested and how good the quality is in that top four, it's a weird one because I think there is a very, very likely scenario where United have a good season where we get considerably better than last year and end up moving down two spots in the league.
Yeah.
I think we could become a much, much better team and still finish fourth.
Yeah.
And that's quite a disheartening feeling when you think.
It is, yeah.
Obviously, we judge so much on the league position, but I think even in terms of points, we could go to 85, 86 points and still potentially finish fourth.
Yeah.
I'm sure that won't actually happen, but you know, I think there is an argument to be had that the league position actually could get worse, even if United still have a decent-ish season.
It is worth remembering that the quality in the rest of the league is going to be pretty good next year. If you think about it, Leeds are going to be even better, I think. I think Leeds will have another good season and keep building on. Arsenal should be better. Spurs will be better all round over the season. They were great for about a month and then terrible for the rest of it. But Spurs should be a little bit better. Leicester are going to build again. They haven't lost any key players. And you look down the rest of the side and Aston Villa should be there. There is quality all over the league, as there has been for a few years. But it's worth remembering that when we talk about 90 points, that maybe it just won't be possible because other teams are really good. I'll give you my final wild prediction before we talk about Leeds as the game rather than Leeds United, the football club. I'd say we've got more chance of winning the Champions League than the Premier League. And if we're going to finish third, then we absolutely have to win a major cup, which, I mean, there's only two. It's the FA Cup and the Champions League. And to be honest, the FA Cup probably wouldn't be enough. So we've got to go and win the Champions League if we're not going to challenge properly for the title. And the truth is that I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is a Champions League manager rather than a title-winning manager. And I think United as a team are possibly a Champions League winning team rather than a Premier League winning one, with the strength and the sheer quality of players like Varane, Sancho, Maguire, Shaw, Cavani. Those are players who, with individual moments of skill, can get you through really difficult, high quality Champions League games. And I'm not predicting us to go and win it this season, but I think with the team and with the manager who can pull big game performances out, can pull tactical surprises out, but sometimes can get found out over the course of a month during a season. And the truth with the Champions League is that you just don't have to be as good to win it as you do for a Premier League. The real test is a Premier League. The best team in England is the one that wins the Premier League. That's why City were the best team last season, not Chelsea. And Chelsea are the perfect example. You look at them, all you have to do in the Champions League is get out of the group stage and you don't know what can happen. Chelsea last year are the perfect example. Tottenham a couple of years ago, Atletico and Juventus and Dortmund in recent times too, even us in 2011. And so we have to get out of the group stages convincingly, and then we have to go and put a serious run together, because once you're at the quarterfinals, then you're thinking, right, let's go win it.
Yeah, and so much of that comes down to the draw as well. In the Premier League, obviously everyone playing the same teams twice throughout the course of the season. You know, there's not much variation that happens, really. You know, throughout the season, like you said, the best team wins the Premier League, and that's kind of undisputed. The difference in the Champions League, though, is that it is very possible that you can have a relatively easy group, and then you play teams that you're kind of expected to beat. And, you know, I'm looking at Chelsea's Champions League run last year, and don't get me wrong, Chelsea played fantastically throughout this Champions League run. But Atletico in the last 16, then Porto in the quarterfinals was, you know, one of the easiest draws you could ask for. A Real Madrid side who really didn't offer much at all in the semi-final, outside of Karim Benzema and Luka Modric, didn't have a ton of quality. And then obviously beat City in the final in a one-off game. And I think, you know, it can happen. It's easier for a team to go through the Champions League not being the best team and still come through. And it's the same with any knockout competition, to be honest. The Champions League, because it's two legs, there is slightly less of that. But there's so much variation in the draws. All it would take is, you know, let's say Bayern Munich and PSG get drawn together again, like they did last time in a round before the semi-final. Then, you know, again, that opens up the competition massively, especially if then there's another surprise, say a City or a Chelsea don't make it through to the semi-finals and we do. The competition opens up, and then it's just one or two games here and there. I'm with you that it needs to be, if we're not finishing, especially if we're finishing third or fourth, a trophy has to come with it, whether it's the FA Cup or the Champions League. We'd obviously prefer the Champions League, but we're getting, you know, a bit ahead of ourselves. But this has to be the trophy season. And I think Varane in particular, I fell into this trap earlier in the podcast. So I hate appraising a player purely based on what they've won, because it's so much more than just that individual player in football.
Yeah.
But I think with Varane in particular, we've seen that this team is capable of winning trophies. We just haven't been able to get over the line. And that experience of knowing how to win, I don't think it changes Varane's quality, but knowing how to win in this team, that is a quality that we need.
It also is, it's a little bit about quality, because Varane is, he's a great one-on-one defender because of his pace. And so he suits the Champions League. As in, when you think about the great players in the Champions League, if we were going to go up against PSG, you'd be so much more confident with Varane there, just because you think if Varane and Mbappe come up against each other, if Varane and Messi or Neymar come up against each other, I'd still, like, for a lot of the time, I'd still back Varane. And obviously he's going to get dribbled past at some point during the game. Obviously he's going to get done at some point in the game, but over the course of the game, I'd be confident in his ability. So he's a huge reason, and Cavani as well. To have a serious goal scorer like that, who's probably, if we're going to, maybe we'll start in a serious Champions League game, but maybe come off the bench. And so my stupid, ridiculously stupid, but optimistic prediction for the season is we're going to finish fourth and win the Champions League. And on that note, let's talk about Leeds on Saturday. Something else I'm just so looking for. I cannot wait. I've rarely been more excited for a game. 75,000 at Old Trafford. It's going to feel utterly surreal, but also just, I'm just going to be grinning all day. And I just hope that the game lives up to what we're all expecting. And to be honest, I can't see it not, because for both teams, Leeds will bring an incredible away support. The atmosphere but from both sets of fans, it's just going to be out of this world. I think both sets of players just will find it impossible not to respond to that. And hopefully we see another stupid, ridiculous pinball game like the 6-2 back in December 2020.
I think you'll probably see the start of the season in the Premier League just be wild, to be honest. I think
I just want to see carnage. I want to see carnage.
And I think we will. If we're ever in for a month of just pure chaos, I think this is it. You know, fans being back in the stadium, the atmospheres are going to be off the scale. And players, I think, will respond to that. We saw so many games last season where you could just sense that the players, that the atmosphere was so flat. And it just meant, it just created such tired games, didn't it? Like, remember the home game against Chelsea, the 0-0? I mean, that was just so drab.
It was a pointless game.
Yeah, it was. And it was the kind of game where having a crowd in there just changes the feel of the game so much. And so I think we are going to see some probably pretty outrageous results in the first month or so. And I can't wait, to be honest. I cannot wait. I'm with you. I've rarely been so excited for a season. I think for a few reasons, obviously fans coming back is a huge part of it. And it will just feel so good to see fans back in the stadium and be able to watch football again and it feel normal and to see and to feel like you're part of something. You know, that's kind of what I missed from watching football with no fans, that you just feel so disconnected from it. So I'm looking forward to that, obviously. But also for United in ourselves, I'm excited to see us play again. I missed watching us over the summer, despite how the sour note that the season ended on. I feel so connected to this group of players. And I think that's held true for a couple of years now. And especially with the new signings that we've made, that I'm also so excited to watch. I can't wait for the season. I really can't. And like you said, Leeds in particular, you couldn't ask for a better game, because it's a game that we expect to win. So it's not quite, you know, like playing City or Liverpool or Chelsea, where it would be a big game, but you're also like, oh shit, like we might not get off to the best start here. It's a game that on paper we should win, but it's still a game that you can get up for massively.
Yeah, we have to win. I can't deal with us not winning. We just absolutely have to win. In terms of, I don't want to talk about the team too much. I just want to talk about the excitement. But yeah, it is just feeling part of something. And I just at the Everton game, I was working at the Everton game, but I had a brilliant time just looking around and watching 55,000 people celebrate four goals. I just thought this is, I'd just forgotten how good it was. I knew I missed it, but I'd honestly just forgotten how loud that many people could be, how different a sport it was. And that was for a friendly where Everton were terrible. They looked so off it. But Leeds is just, I'm not sure we'll have seen anything like it before. I really don't. I just hope it all goes smoothly. Everyone can get into their seats fine and there's no problem, because United have moved to kind of cardless tickets on your phone. So I'm hoping that causes no problems. But yeah, it should be exciting. I think we'll probably see Varane and Sancho start on the bench, I think. Possibly Sancho could start, but I don't think Varane will make it. I think Mason Greenwood looked really fresh against Everton, and I'm excited to see his start of the season. I think he could do well. I think I'm going to, on the subject of Fantasy Premier League, I think he's probably going to get into my team for the start of the season. I feel like he's ready for a big burst at the start of this season.
Yeah, I think I'm excited to watch Greenwood. I just think he's such a great young player, and I feel terrible for him on the one hand that he wasn't able to take his place potentially in the Euro squad because of the injury. But I actually think long term it will do him the world of good, and I think he should be ready now to come in. He's got this chance with Rashford not being available for a while. Cavani will probably need rotation. This is his chance now, I think, to go out and grab the chance by the scruff of the neck. In a way, I think he's almost been a bit of a forgotten man recently, and I think that's probably a good thing for him, because a bit of the pressure and the spotlight is off and he can just go out and enjoy his football. And just another player that I can't wait to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, we're going to have to wrap up. We're going to go without predictions because, as we said, he's just going to be carnage. So no predictions from us. But thank you very much for listening to episode 1 of series 7 of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast for the 2021-22 season. We're delighted to be back and absolutely can't wait. Thank you for listening. For a bonus Q&A, which we're about to go and record, you can become a patron of the show. Go to our Twitter, which is at UTD Weekly Pod. That's POD at the end there. Go to there and you can find out information about how to become a patron, but also you can find information about how to join our Fantasy Premier League team. The code is ILWW6H, and there'll be cash prizes for the top three. And remember, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on Apple or anywhere else you can. It's always a massive help. For more from me and Jack throughout the week, you can find me on Twitter at HarryRobinson64, and you can find Jack
at UTDTait, TAIT.
Chisel, enjoy Saturday, make the most of it, because we've waited a long time for this. Goodbye.
Social Podcast Network.